Fancy a game?
We don't want your fancy life-changing career starting moving out of my parents' house college education.
Oh, man.
What? How embarrassing was that for us?
Oh, my God, was it embarrassing.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Hello, profiting off of head injuries. So we have a lot on the show today. Golden Knights won again. They are 2-0-0 during Hanukkah. Another fun game. They played two games in a row with a lot of lead changes where they score first, then they blow the lead, and then they come back and win. It's been great. Ryan Wallace, he'll join us, teach us about Judaism and Hanukkah. We got Jesus goal calls as well. And Mike Grimala is live from Illinois. Probably won't ask him about basketball, though. Probably only ask him about food.
Yeah, I mean, why would we have Monda talk about basketball?
Should probably start with the Golden Knights. That'd probably be the smart thing to do, but that's not what I'm doing.
Not if we have Ryan later.
Yeah, you could do both. I'm here for you, and I'll be basketball. They play Illinois, a Big Ten team. And of course, I'm going to start the show with stats. I have two numbers that will make UNLV lose against Illinois and two numbers that will make UNLV win against Illinois. Now, I'm going to give you the losing number first here, but stats. Illinois makes 40% of its three-pointers. That is top 30 in the country. Meanwhile, UNLV opponents are making 38% of their threes this year. That's not very good. But remember... Three-point defense is more about the attempts you give up, not the makes, and UNLV is actually limiting opponents to very few attempts. They just happen to be making a bunch of them. Illinois will play three guards and at times four guards. They'll probably actually start with technically four guards. Their top three shooters by attempts are shooting from three this year, 50%, 47%, and 38%. So that guy down there at 38% struggling. He's bringing the whole team down. So UNLV is going to have to defend the perimeter and defend multiple shooters. We haven't really seen them have to do that a lot this year. They've played some teams with good shooters, but it's been like, oh, one guy can shoot. Two guys can shoot. Illinois is going to have three, four guys out there at all times that can shoot the ball. There have been a lot of bad shooting teams on the schedule. Illinois is not one so far in the year. So, three-point test, probably the stiffest one of the non-conference for UNLV. The second number that makes UNLV lose. Illinois forces turnovers on 25% of possessions. That is the seventh highest rate in the country. UNLV's offense, by the way, they turn the ball over on 24% of possessions. That's the ninth worst rate in the country. So you have one of the 10 teams that turns the ball over the most playing one of the 10 teams that creates the most turnovers. That's not really a good plan. Same thought process as the Cincinnati game, though. A lot of these turnovers by UNLV are just unforced errors. I mean, they're getting called for moving screens because they're not aware that in college basketball, the emphasis is you've got to keep your feet within the width of your shoulders or they're going to call a moving screen on you. Like, they're getting called for stuff like that. Like, that's not the opponent making them do anything. That's them just not paying attention to details when they go to set a screen. You have stupid travels and passes that are just, oh, that guy's not standing there anymore. Like, there are a lot of unforced errors. And so I think UNLV's offense controls the turnovers more than whatever defense that they're playing. So, again, kind of like the Cincinnati game, I think this comes down more to UNLV playing well than Illinois or Cincinnati creating a lot of turnovers. So those are your two bad numbers, potentially a lot of UNLV turnovers and a lot of Illinois threes. Your two good numbers, two reasons, two stats why UNLV can win against Illinois. Illinois allows free throws at the 10th highest rate in the country. They foul a lot. They give a lot of free throws. Their last three games, they gave up 32 free throws to Ohio State, 30 to Nebraska, and 39 to Notre Dame. On the flip side, it's a strength for UNLV and pretty much all Marvin Menzies' teams. We talked about last week offensive rebounding and how Marvin Menzies' teams are good offensive rebounding teams because they play really big and they crash the glass. Similar to that, all Marvin Menzies' teams tend to get to the free throw line a lot. That's just the way they end up playing. He has pretty much always had good teams in terms of getting to the free throw line. The problem for UNLV is they're 285th in the country in free throw percentage at 65%. National average is 70%. So with that style that Menzies plays, have a bunch of post players, throw it into the post, you get a lot of free throws. But he has always had bad free throw shooting teams. In his career as a coach, 9 years in New Mexico State, now into his third year here at UNLV, he has never had a team finish in the top 100 in the country in free throw shooting. Always has bad free throw shooting teams. And the main reason, or the trend, would be he has a lot of post players. He runs his offense through the post. Those guys get fouled, and typically your post players are bad free throw shooters. So that's sort of the logic behind it. The math on it, though, like, so UNLV shooting 65% of free throws. That's not good. But that's still probably the most efficient thing they can do on offense. Because, like, if you play that out, if 65%, if you got 100 free throws, you're scoring 1.3 points per possession. 200 free throws on 100 possessions. You get 2 free throws per possession. It's 135 points per possession. If you shoot 35% from 3, which UNLV doesn't, they shoot like 28%, you're not getting to 1.35 points per possession. And if you shoot 50% on 2s, which UNLV is right around that mark, you're not getting to 1.3 points per possession. So even at 65%, free throws are still good, but you'd like to make more of those, obviously. The second stat for UNLV to win: Illinois opponents are shooting 57% on 2-pointers. That is in the bottom 30 of the country. What that stat means, Illinois gives up a ton of layups. That's the downside to playing 4 guards. You don't have height. Their center is a 6'9" guy. The rest of the guys on the floor are like 6'4", 6'5". So they don't have a lot of height. They do have 2 7-footers, but they're on the bench and only play a few minutes. But this kind of goes hand-in-hand with the free-throw shooting theme. Menzies' teams love to pound the ball inside. You get more layups that way, and UNLV tends to be a very good 2-point team. So Illinois plays small, and you're UNLV, you want to beat them up inside. So take those 2 positive stats, and here's what should happen, or here's what needs to happen for UNLV to win. Shakur Justin has to have a monster game. Absolutely. So Illinois fouls a lot. They give a lot of layups. They're going to start at their, quote-unquote, power forward spot, a guy that is 6'5". That's the guy that's going to be matched up with Shakur Justin. Justin has to dominate this game. Like, that's what has to happen. I guess conceivably they could put the 6'9 guy on Justin and the 6'5 guy on Jiang. If that's the case, then Mbaki Jiang has to dominate the game. But I'm assuming it'll be Justin at least to start. And Shakur Justin has to be dominant in this game. Anytime a team's going to play 4 guards, Shakur Justin has to be unstoppable. He has to take over and just make the other team play a true post player at the power forward spot. That's what has to happen, because what'll happen on the other side is, oh, they're playing 4 guards. Shakur Justin now has to guard a guy out to the 3-point line. Oh, they made a bunch of 3s, and that's more than Shakur Justin's layups. So Justin has to, that's the problem with the style that Menzies plays, is the math doesn't end up working out because the other team makes a bunch of 3s and you just get a bunch of layups, and the 3 is worth more than the 2. So Justin has to be so much better that he can outweigh that 3 is worth more than 2. So that's sort of where it comes from.
So he has to make up for a deficiency in math.
Yes, that is correct. That's what has to happen.
Okay, good luck, buddy.
Yep. I got another stat for you.
Okay, I'll take it.
Marvin Menzies is 2-23 in his coaching career against power conference teams. And both wins came last year. They beat Utah at T-Mobile Arena and Illinois at MGM, which means he was 0-17 in 9 seasons at New Mexico State against power conference teams. It's crazy bad for a team that was, 9 seasons there. All of them were winning years, and 7 of those 9 years, they won at least 20 games, and 5 of them, they went to the NCAA tournament. They were a good WAC team. They just never beat a power conference team. And at first, when I first sort of saw that, I was like, yeah, it's New Mexico State. It's a WAC school. That's not that big of a deal. But since he left, Paul Weir went 1-1. Chris Jans, who's in his second year, 3-2. So 9 seasons under Menzies, New Mexico State was 0-17 against power conference teams. Since he left, they're 4-3 in 3 seasons.
So what you're saying is had he stayed, he would be 4-20? Because I thought we already established the narrative of he sort of turned New Mexico State into...
He made it good. These other guys have made it better.
Oh, I don't know about that. I thought that basically because they keep changing out coaches and the success never goes away, that he basically turned it into a turnkey enterprise.
Yeah, but maybe they're souping up the cars a little bit better.
All right.
Making some additions.
I'm trying to be captain positive.
Shoot a three every now and then. All right, one last thing.
You're killing me.
One last thing for UNLV basketball. Noah Robotham is 8 of 38 from three-point range. That is 21%. Noah Robotham, career at Akron, 38% shooter from three. So we are going to go against Noah Robotham's wishes. If you remember, before the season started, we were calling him Robot Ham. I went and asked him what he thought about it. He hates it.
Did not like it.
So we said, all right, we'll call you Robotham. But he's 8 for 38 from three. So starting now, we're calling him Robot Ham.
We're bringing it back.
And if he becomes a good shooter, if he shoots like 4 or 5 from three against Illinois, we are taking sole credit for that because he's officially Noah Robot Ham. If he goes 0 for 7, we'll call him Robotham on Monday. But if he has a good shooting day, he's Robot Ham, and that's just how it's going to be.
Yep. All right. I think we're in agreement. Yep.
Right. Technically correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try to be connected sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Helps to have the briefs up. All right, Ryan Reeves signed pictures of a concussed Tom Wilson laying on the ice in order for them to be sold.
Inscriptographs is a memorabilia shop in Las Vegas. They were selling photos of Tom Wilson laying on the ice with Reeves' autograph with the inscription, "Ran into a lion in the jungle." The Washington Post has a story on it in which the Golden Knights responded saying the photos were not distributed and they have been destroyed. So what happened here is this inscriptographs apparently got Ryan Reeves to sign these photos and then posted them on their Twitter and Instagram account saying, hey, these are for sale. It's a must-have for Golden Knights fans. There was a lot of backlash to that, given that Tom Wilson was given a concussion on the play. And the tweets and Instagram posts were deleted. And eventually the Golden Knights put out that statement, talked to the Washington Post and said, no, we destroyed them all. Ryan Reeves last night did confirm that he signed them. But then, from what he said, realized that was in poor taste and called up Inscriptographs and said, hey, let's not do this.
So it's sort of like my Twitter in the morning.
If you were celebrating a concussion of somebody else.
So it's sort of like my Twitter in the morning.
Your own concussions?
There you go.
So the detail that makes this bad, and it's something we don't officially know, but I think we can assume, is that Ryan Reeves was essentially trying to make money off another guy getting a concussion.
Not just getting a concussion, giving that dude.
Yeah. And I think with Ryan Reeves, like, I love Ryan Reeves and just his general attitude because he wants to have fun. Like, he wants to do things that are fun. He wants to goof around. Like, you see him on the ice. He hits people and then laughs, like, goes over the top laughing at him on the ice because he knows it pisses people off, and it's hilarious. Like, it's terrific. He's a troll on the ice is what he is. So, like, I love that. But I think what this sort of illustrates is he doesn't know where the line is. Like, it's perfectly fine to hit a guy, and when he gets out, like he did in that game, Tom Wilson hit him, or he hit Tom Wilson, and then Tom Wilson tried to come back for retaliation, and he knocked Wilson down again and then just laughed at him while Wilson tried to chase him down. And, like, that's hilarious. But there's clearly a line of, like, okay, you can't go try to make money off, oh, I gave that guy a concussion, let's brag about it, and, oh, pay me some money at the same time. Like, that's a really bad look for Ryan Reeves.
The only line he should care about is the blue one. No.
Man, that is not a good joke.
Yeah. Not, yeah. Swing and a miss.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the next brief.
Was that one of the four hockey references you could make?
I think I'm up to five.
Oh, okay.
Because now I include me just yelling Velcro. The Raiders will bring Donald Penn off the injured reserve.
So the offensive tackle got hurt earlier this year, and it looks like he'll return. They've got, it's interesting with the Raider tackle spot and this whole tanking idea, because they have Colt Miller at left tackle, first round pick, who was pretty good to start the year. Then they're like, hey, your knee hurts, keep playing. They've got at right tackle Brandon Parker, who was their third round pick, who has not been good at all. But in the idea of, like, tanking, you want to play the young guys.
Yeah.
Like, Donald Penn's under contract for next year, but there's no point in playing Donald Penn. Like, he's not going to be on this team when John Gruden's is like, all right, the tank is over. But at the same time, Brandon Parker hasn't been any good, and Colton Miller's hurt. Like, you should either put him at right tackle so Derek Carr doesn't get killed before the season's over, or put him at left tackle and say, thanks for the season, Colton Miller. Get healthy, and we'll see what you can do next year. Like, that to me is what I would do. It's like, Colt Miller, you're hoping, is your left tackle for a long time. You're hoping that guy's really good. Stop making him play through a knee injury when you're going to get the second pick in the NFL draft.
I mean, yeah, that's obvious. But also, I don't even know why you'd bother bringing him off the injured reserve.
So that Colt Miller can stop playing.
That's how you can put Colt Miller on the injured reserve.
But they're going to keep playing. I know they're going to keep playing Colt Miller. So, yeah, I don't know how they do it. And then even next year, like, Donald Penn, I think his salary is like $8 million next year. They can cut him, and I think it's only like $2.5 million dead cap or something like that. So I'm curious what they do next year, because conceivably you could bring him back as a backup next season, or you could, because there'd be no point in playing him or starting him next year. If Donald Penn comes back, the smart thing to do is make him a backup, because you're going to be tanking again. So I don't know, but Donald Penn's back. Then the other news from this, Marshawn Lynch, his season is done, because you can only bring two guys off of IR. Donald Penn's the second guy they've brought back off of IR, so Lynch cannot come back this year. So his career in Oakland might be over, because his contract's up after this year. His career in general might be over, because he might just retire and ride off into the sunset on his golf cart from Skittles.
But that joke was good.
No, that wasn't. That wasn't a good joke at all.
UNLV is ranked 166th. In net.
Slightly better than the blue line joke, though, but still not
good.
Oh,
yeah, no, the blue line joke was me grasping at straws.
Net ratings. UNLV has plummeted. They were 47th in the first net ratings. Now they're 166. This is the new college basketball system rating system that replaces RPI, if you're unaware. The first time it came out, Loyola Marymount was 10th. They're now 54th. UNLV was the third best Mountain West team. And in the top 50, they're now the sixth best Mountain West team and not in the top 150. It looks, the rate, so if you remember, the ratings got a lot of backlash because they were kind of ridiculous looking. But they look a lot more realistic at this point, because your top five are Virginia, Michigan, Duke, Gonzaga, Texas Tech. Nevada's 10. Like, you just had to give it some time to get some more data, and then it would start looking normal. Again, don't worry about it until January or February. That's when college basketball ratings actually mean something, because that's when you have to play conference opponents, which make up 55% of your schedule.
All right. So convoluted math thing works out in the end.
Net ratings. Just name it like you. The blue line ratings. It's the NHL's going to come up with. Ah, you can play it. I'm just talking.
This show's been a freaking train wreck.
That's been a good show.
Yeah. Lights FC announced a search for the most interesting player in the world.
I don't know what this means.
I think it means that they have a sponsorship with Dos Equis.
Like, what does that mean? Like, what is most, like, I don't know what that means.
I assume there was an internal meeting that was, okay, we may not be able to get the best players, but we'll certainly get the most interesting.
Like, the quote from Eric Winalda, who's the new manager, was like, oh, we'll take Ronald McDonald or Colonel Sanders.
So we're hiring mascots?
Yeah, basically. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't make it, like, I don't know what mode. Like, they're just hoping that there's somebody with some soccer skill that does something else really cool.
Who is that kicker who was dreadful for the Chargers but could do all the trick shots? Get him.
Young Wei Koo?
That one? Get him.
I don't know. It was...
He'll never score a goal, but his pregame warm-up will be just like, dang, that guy did a cool thing. We lost by five.
Brett Lashbrook, the owner of the team, also said that they're willing to be the first team to break gender barriers and take on a female player.
Okay. I kind of like it. I like it. All right. Is that legal?
I don't know. But they're just like, hey, we're looking for the most interesting player in the world. And it means nothing.
I know.
It literally means nothing. It's a statement that means absolutely nothing.
UNLV volleyball beat Portland in the National Invitational Volleyball Championship quarterfinals.
So they're into the semifinals.
Yeah, they are.
Watch out. They might win something. UNLV
I know.
Might win something here.
You're home for UNLV volleyball postseason coverage. Technically correct.
So they lost the first set to Portland, came back to win the next three. They are going to Iowa State for the semifinal on Saturday. That game is at 10 a.m. Pacific time, by the way. The interesting thing about Iowa State, Don Sullivan, the new coach at UNLV, she came from Iowa State. She had been there as an assistant for, I think it was 13 years. So in her first year at UNLV, she's going back there to play them in a postseason event. Again, this is the NIT version of volleyball, so it's not the national title, but UNLV's in the Final Four or something, and the winner of them and Iowa State goes to the final. They play either Tulane or the College of Charleston.
So what you're saying is Don Sullivan might know we're all like, oh, that girl had a bad knee injury.
That's right. She's got a scouting report there. The one problem, I don't know if problem's the right word, UNLV can't host any of these. They can't host the semis or the final because of the stupid rodeo. The rodeo came in and took away their home court advantage. Otherwise, they could be playing like the semis or the final in the Cox Pavilion.
And, okay. Sorry, I just got this weird, like, thought of, well, why can't we do them both? And then I remembered playing volleyball while the, like, smell of...
I think they give them the Cox, too.
Okay.
Like, I think they put something down. I don't know what they use it for, but they use it for something. Usually when events come to Thompson Mac, they're like, yeah, take the Cox Pavilion, too. It's a bonus. Just throw it in there.
I loved when the rodeo would come to UNLV, just the smell. The 51s will unveil their new nickname tomorrow.
99% or 100% chance it's Aviators?
So according to my sources, there are people who in the 51s organization, when you ask them about getting Aviator stuff early, will curse and go, how does everyone know? So,
I can't imagine how everybody knows.
It's not like they filed for a patent on it and then went, well, that's just one of the names we were considering.
And then never released the other name. the thing I'm curious about is, are they unveiling the new logo tomorrow as well? I assume they are, but are they doing that tomorrow?
I mean, I'm just assuming it's going to be Cosmo and a big pair of aviators, and they're all going to come out and go, surprise! And the media is going to go, okay, remember that article I wrote in June? Print it.
I hope it's good. Whatever the logo is, I hope it's good. Like, aviators as a name, whatever. If you got a cool plane logo, I'm in. That's going to be awesome. If it's a stupid plane logo, worst name ever.
Are we going to refer to them as the Las Vegas Aviators of Summerlin?
You got
to
get off this Summerlin thing.
No? Okay.
It's not a big deal.
I just enjoy that. That's one of my favorite things ever. Like, you know, the Santa Clara 49ers are the Cobb County Braves. Whatever. That's just me.
Short briefs today.
I know.
Because we got to get to Ryan Wallace and Hanukkah and Mike Grimala and food and,
Do you want me to go to break? Sure.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
What if they're just, like, on the bubble by the last day of Hanukkah?
That's what, December 10th? I would say if they are in a playoff spot by December 10th, they will make the playoffs.
So Hanukkah.
So Hanukkah's the one we're going to go with. That's the holiday that we're going to measure the Golden Knights and their playoff probability by.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Ryan, the hockey guy Wallace, is here.
I like that open.
We are almost to the end of Hanukkah.
We are. A few more days.
Two more games.
I've cautiously held off on celebrating Hanukkah.
Because?
Just to wait to see if the Golden Knights are in a playoff spot.
So if they aren't, you're not going to celebrate Hanukkah?
Oh, no. It's probably going to happen tonight. Like, okay. I think I'm going to celebrate Hanukkah tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was supposed to be 8 days of celebrating.
That's not a thing that actually happened when I was growing up. It was more like at some point during the 8 days, we all just decided to exchange gifts and eat some nice food.
So really, Hanukkah is just like a flexible Christmas.
Essentially.
You have a window to celebrate opposed to one day.
That's how I celebrated it. Like, that's how we celebrated it growing up. And given my work schedule these days and my wife's work schedule and my kids are crazy. So, yeah, we're just going to use it as a flexible Christmas. And then we're going to have, like, steadfast celebrate on this day Christmas later on in the month.
Double dipping. All right.
Yes, sir.
You'll have to let us know if this is offensive. I don't think it's offensive. But this is what we've been doing all week.
Happy Hanukkah. Are the Golden Knights in a playoff spot?
Yes, they are. They're the second wild card team.
Look at that.
Because they won and Minnesota lost in Calgary last night. So they're at 33. Minnesota's at 32. They still got two more games. Got to last till Monday.
Yeah.
But they're in a playoff spot right now.
Well, I think when you look at the two games they have coming up, LA is certainly a winnable game, right?
Wait. We need your ruling on something, by the way.
Okay.
So the Golden Knights have more points than Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
One more. But they've played two more games. So technically, Minnesota has a better record. They have a better winning percentage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on Monday, you're coming back on Monday, right?
I'll come
to
back
officially.
Yeah.
All right.
You can do that.
So on Monday, if they have, in this scenario, one more point than Minnesota, but Minnesota's played two fewer games and Minnesota technically has a better record, is that truly a playoff spot?
How about I put it this way? If the Golden Knights are in a wild card spot, it doesn't count because I don't think that there will be four teams from the Pacific Division in the playoffs.
So they need to catch San Jose.
They need to be in one of the top three spots in the Pacific.
Okay. They're tied with San Jose on points, but San Jose's played one fewer game. So
well, sure. Yeah.
They're technically behind San Jose.
They're technically behind.
If they're in a wild card spot, we're still celebrating on
Okay,
Monday.
That's fine. You can. Okay.
I'm just saying, he's
a traditionalist.
I don't foresee any scenario in which four teams from the Pacific Division are going to the playoffs.
The Golden Knights are 2-0-0 in Hanukkah this year. They were 3-0-1 last year. Their only loss was a shootout loss to Carolina. So they've never lost actual hockey during Hanukkah.
That's greatest, pretty awesome.
Biggest domination during Hanukkah ever, right?
Every day should be Hanukkah.
Should be.
For the Golden Knights.
Yeah. Can they move it to June? Can you talk to some people?
Aww. Yikes. How long did that series... That series went five games, so it was over the course of, what, 10 days?
Something like that.
So, if it aligned for the start of the playoffs, or I'm sorry, the start of the Stanley Cup Final, then they'd be Stanley Cup champion.
They would be. That's too bad. All right. I don't know what this thing is called, but people don't like this horn we play.
Mazel tov.
I think it's the length of the horn more than anything.
We cut that down. The actual sound of that is about a minute and 20 seconds.
I mean, the sound is horrible. I can see why people don't like it.
It's a, what's it called, a giraffe?
Yeah, something like that. But
it's a ram. You hollow out a ram horn and blow through it, apparently, and that's what happens.
That's awesome. Don't ever play that again.
Oh, you're going to do it on Monday.
No, yeah. No. Yeah, like, I'll come back on Monday only if we don't play
we
that.
We do it every... Well, if they make the playoffs, that's how we celebrate.
Geez, that's the celebration?
Yeah.
That's the best you can come up with?
Yeah.
Come on.
It's Hanukkah. Isn't that like the height of excitement?
You should actually replace this with the celebration from the Golden Knights fans.
Oh, we
last
have that.
Night.
We
you
have
should
that.
Just do that
we
instead
have
of the horn.
All right,
like, that would be better.
This is, we're going to get to Jesus' goal calls, but this is from ESPN Deportes. This is the Spanish call when everybody in T-Mobile Arena thought the Golden Knights had scored, except the man standing at center ice.
Escuchamos.
After video review,
después de haber revisado las imágenes, damas y caballeros, aunque el adelanto ya lo teníamos, porque atrás...
Jesus got duped.
Well,
I mean,
the entire arena got duped when, I don't know, the goal horn went off, and then the music played, and then the smoke was shooting out of the corners of the ice. Like... probably best to let the referee finish talking.
I just enjoyed that it took him 10 seconds to realize the referee was not done talking.
Oh, he was just standing there.
Yeah.
Just, no, I'm not moving. I'm literally going to stand here until you guys are done celebrating, and then I'm going to destroy your lives.
One of the best refereeing moments ever. Because he's just waiting to deliver the bad news.
I wish it was Alan McCauley, because he's like one of the most flamboyant referees in the game right now. So he would have like relished that moment. He would have been like, yeah, bring it on, guys. Bring it on. Keep going. Keep going. Oh, by the way, no goal. And it would have been emphatic. Like it would have just ruined T-Mobile Arena for sure.
So I just enjoyed that so much.
The best part about that though was sitting next to you. Because you're like, wait, he's got more to say. And I'm like, yep.
We didn't point. The best part of goal reviews is the referee
the emphatic
turns and
goal.
Points to center ice.
Yeah.
And he hadn't pointed yet. And I was like, all right, something's up. He hasn't pointed yet, and everybody's losing their mind.
Well, because, I mean, there were two things that the referees were trying to determine on that initial play. Did the puck go in before the net was knocked off the pegs? Yes. Okay. Was there goalie interference that could overturn this goal? Yes. Like, those are the two things that they were determining. And then when you come back to center ice as a referee, you've got to let everybody know what they just reviewed. So, the puck did cross the goal line, but there was goalie interference. So, therefore, no goal.
Didn't get to that butt for
didn't
a long
get
time,
to the butt.
It's
yeah.
very good.
Yeah.
Duped Jesus. All right. We got calls from Jesus. This is the best part of our show, when we shut up and let somebody else talk. This is Riley Smith's power play goal.
Y ya está ahí Jonathan Marchessault. Se pone movimiento. El puck es para el equipo de Vegas Golden Knights. En la línea azul. Abriendo por derecha. Lo tiene. Pachuete. Disparo. Y el portero nuevamente. Lo suelta. ¡Gol!
Just one question. What was Chicago doing on that penalty kill?
Allowing Max Pacioretty all the time in the world to do whatever he wanted to do?
They just vacated the center
yeah.
of the ice.
Like, and it's funny because when you look at the Golden Knights, a successful penalty kill, they really collapse in on the middle of the ice and take away all of those opportunities, and they don't leave men completely wide open to just shoot from the high-danger scoring chances or areas. But, I don't know. The Chicago just... decided that they weren't going to get a stick or any type of anything in front of Max Pacioretty in the high slot, which is not necessarily a recipe for success on the penalty kill.
My theory is they did not know they were killing a penalty. They thought it was 5-on-5, so they were just playing that straight up.
I mean, that's certainly a theory. I mean, I can't argue with it because of how badly played that penalty kill was. I mean, it was only 8 seconds of penalty killing time, but when you allow... 3 high danger scoring chances and in 8 seconds, probably not a good percentage.
Derek Engelin scored. It was a hilarious goal. This is a fun call.
Y otra vez, Riley Smith, va a venir uno más. Gol!
Jonathan Gengelen Matheson.
Derrick Gengelen,
es Gengelen.
Derrick Gengelen con un disparo de larga distancia. Adelantadito nada más de la segunda línea azul. Y cae el segundo del equipo de Vegas Golden Knights. ¡Golazo!
I just love that Herbert Castro, the color analyst, could not believe that Derrick Engelin scored that goal, so he had to credit to somebody else.
I mean, let's be honest.
It's still hard to believe that Derrick Engelin scored that goal.
It's a wrist shot from the point without a ton of traffic in front of Corey Crawford, and it's going left. And inexplicably, as the puck is coming toward Corey Crawford, he lunges to the right for no reason. Like, there's literally no reason for the movement of Corey Crawford halfway through the shot. I don't really understand it. He absolutely missed it. And yeah, I mean, there were a lot of people trying to credit this goal to, I don't know, a tip or...
Because it would have made sense.
Yeah.
Derrick Engelin doesn't just shoot wristers from the blue line into the back of the net.
I'll tell you what, Duncan Keith made Derrick Engelin look really fast last night. On multiple occasions.
All right, you get something special. We got this Tuesday as well. The whole 2 goals in 12 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is, this is about like 90 seconds.
Okay.
Just both goal calls in one.
All
because
right.
There's no point in separating them.
Yes, para el equipo de Vegas Golden Knights. Shea Theodore. Mandándolos donde está Jonathan Marchessault. Lo jala. Es el Riley Smith. Bien, viene Marchessault. Disparo. ¡Gol!
Con un disparo que llega a horadar la portería de Crawford y hasta adentro que está cenando. Súmete que te quedó jabón.
Esto
papá.
Es velocidad, esto es decisión. Aprovechó la jugada, la acompaña.
Miles
recibe y dispara un cañonazo y deja sin ninguna posibilidad al portero Crawford y marca el emocionante 3-3, señoras y señores. Tremendo juego.
Se pone en movimiento nuevamente. Chicago lo tiene por conducto de Brent Seabrook. Y otra vez el robo del equipo de Vegas Golden Knights, señores, desde la portería. Uno más. ¡Gol!
Con decisión, con agallas, está jugando este partido en la T-Mobile Arena de Las Vegas, Nevada, señores.
I don't know if we'll get that again, but we've gotten it twice this week of goals that quickly together, and we just get to play both of them at the same time.
I don't know, man. They play Chicago one more time, so
that's a good one.
It's possible.
Anaheim come here again?
they've got Anaheim. I mean, they got LA on Saturday. It's very possible. Jonathan Quick, elite leadership. Allowing 5 goals every single game.
All right, last thing for you. Money Puck tweeted this out earlier in the week that 2.5% of NHL players are named Ryan.
Yes,
and
I saw that.
I assume you're on board with this.
I approve that.
It's a less cool version of me loving Jake Bischoff, though. You know that, right?
Yeah, but at least this one's not weird.
Oh, it's still weird.
No, I'm not going to walk into the locker room and be like, hey, Ryan Carpenter, hey, Ryan Reeves. Like, you guys should really come on my show because... you're named Ryan, and I'm named Ryan, and, like, a lot of players in the NHL are named Ryan.
That's
like,
not
I'm
not
going to do that.
That's
like,
not weird at all.
No, I mean, it would be less weird for that because there's more people named Ryan. It's kind of odd that you're just infatuated with Jake Bischoff because his last name is Bischoff.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
It's not weird.
That, I mean, your open has how awkward was that for us interviewing Jake Bischoff? Like,
it was very awkward.
Have you reached out to Chicago?
I should.
You should reach out to them and be like, hey, is Jake Bischoff available to come back on my show? They'll say, hey, who are you? And they'll be like, Tyler Bischoff.
I don't think they'll say, hey, who are you? They'll say, absolutely.
Probably. Like, you'll probably have an easier time getting him in Chicago.
Do we send them the 3-minute fake movie trailer as
I would. I would. That would be the selling point. And then they'll be like, oh, yeah, we'll ask Jake. And then they'll go to Jake and be like, hey, Tyler Bischoff wants to have you on his show. And he'd be like, nah. That was just really uncomfortable.
That's mean. Anyway.
But it's technically
accurate.
Correct.
Yeah, accurate.
On this whole Ryan thing.
Uh-huh.
So I don't like calling you Ryan the hockey guy, right?
Yes, that's
I feel
correct.
Like this validates that because 2.5% of NHL players are named Ryan, so there are lots of Ryan the hockey guys.
Okay. I mean, you can call me Ryan Wallace. I don't care what you call me. Ryan, like, I'm not Wallace. Changing the Twitter handle or anything.
Ryan, one of many, the hockey guys, Wallace.
Ryan, if you don't eat meat, you can't be a hockey guy,
That's
Wallace.
That's a good point.
How about that?
That's a good point. You are less of a hockey player.
I am.
Because you don't eat meat.
It's very true.
How does the vegan Jewish hockey spectrum work?
I don't know, man. Growing up in California was just weird to play hockey in general, but did it.
Californian vegan Jewish hockey player.
I mean,
I know you weren't
how
vegan
did
at the time.
How did I get here?
Yes.
Is the only question I have. How did I get here? I don't know.
He's Ryan Wallace, BGK Insider Show, Fox 1340, Rink Rats Podcast on LVSportsNetwork.com. Thank you for providing Edge of Your Seat Radio.
I strive for Edge of Your Seat Radio every single time.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
There's another green brother out there somewhere. Older, younger, doesn't matter. You put him on scholarship, too. I'd put two other greens on scholarship to get Josh Green.
Live from Illinois, it's Mike Kramala of the Las Vegas Sun. What part of Illinois are you in?
I am in Chicago right now. I just got off a plane.
Are you staying in Chicago or are you staying in Champaign?
No, I'm on the road to Champaign. I'm sitting in traffic right now.
All right. We might not ask you any basketball questions. It might be all food because, first off, we have very important news. Your favorite cheddar combos are now being sold in the Las Vegas airport?
Correct. It's a big day for me. Cheese pretzel combos are now available at McCarran Airport.
You've been complaining that Las Vegas' airport is second class because they have not sold that specific flavor of combos.
For years. for years. That's so. I don't think it's a coincidence that they just, after years and possibly decades of not selling that brand of combos, that they just started. So I think word probably got back to someone in power that there was a clamoring for it, and so they made it happen. So I feel like myself and you, Tyler, for giving me this platform played some part in bringing this issue to light. So thank you for that.
Okay, so you're going to Champaign. Jared, your dad lived in Champaign?
Yes.
So Jared has restaurant suggestions for you, and we need you to pick one of these to go eat at.
All right.
Okay.
You ready? Bunny's Tavern.
What do they have there?
It's a tavern.
Yeah, it's a tavern, so like bar food. These are all bars. I don't know if you've heard any stories about me. These are all going to be bars that serve food.
Okay.
Pia.
They don't have like a signature dish or anything.
In Chicago, it's probably Italian beef. Or not in Chicago, in Champaign, it's Italian beef.
Okay.
But, Pia's. Murphy's. Village Inn Pizza or the Tumble Inn. Any of those. If you pass any of those bars, you got to go in and try Italian beef.
Okay. What is Italian beef?
It's sort of like chip roast beef, kind of. It's really good. Just try it, man.
That's not how Mike operates.
I know.
Just try it, man. Doesn't work.
I know. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It's sort of like it's sort of like a roast beef sandwich, but it's like not like.
I've never had a roast beef sandwich or roast beef. I don't think.
Dear God!
So you got to figure out a way to sell this to me. You got to speak to me.
It's really, really succulent, chipped beef. I don't know how else to like explain it. It's got.
What is chipped? I don't know how you chip beef. To me, beef comes. It's very soft. I don't know how you chip that.
It like. I don't know. Are you going to help me out? I'm like staring at Tyler like, save me. I need a life preserver.
I'm going to try. Do you know any deep dish pizza places? That's what I'm looking for.
Village Inn Pizza.
Yeah, Village Inn Pizza.
Okay, done.
All right. You'll give us a status update. I hope it's close to your hotel because you might not end up going if it's not.
Champagne can't be that big.
It's really not. From all the times I've been there, it's really not.
You have less than 45 seconds. UNLV's better with three guards on the floor, aren't they?
They are. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's just a huge noticeable difference. They're plus 14 with three or more guards. They're plus 2 when they play a normal two-guard lineup. Play three guards more often.
There you go. Mike Kramala, head coach of the UNLV Running Rebels. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, guys.
Marvin Menzies called this game the Battle of the Babies.
What?
Because Illinois' starting guards, there's like two sophomores and a freshman. And then UNLV's got like Amori Hardy and Bryce Hamilton. Even though he starts two guards that are seniors. He called it the Battle of the Babies.
Okay.
I think he's just trying to tell everybody that he thinks his team is young. So don't have too high of expectations.
UNLV, Illinois.
UNLV by 7.
Yo, suck it,
suck it, Tyler!